Okay, thank you for the nice introduction. And I'm also delighted to be here. And in particular, as Martin mentioned, that since the paper is on Czech Republic and Slovakia, for me it's very important to get feedback from people who are actually close to this region. Because when you discuss this topic in Germany, is it still the maybe different perception of things? And when you discuss to people who recently adopted the euro, who don't want to adopt the euro, it's the different story. So for me, it's very important to get feedback from you as well. And please feel free to ask any questions as I go during the presentation. I think it also will be productive for both of us to discuss the things when while I go. This is a joint paper with Vladimira Trashenka and Josette Vares, who are both in the Nova School of Business and Economics in Lisbon, in Portugal. And as the title says, we will talk about the psychological cost of currency transition. And I will take the case of the euro adoption by Slovakia and look into the costs that psychological costs that this euro adoption in Slovakia brought to individuals. Generally, the topic of euro adoption is quite macroeconomic topic. And in our presentation, in my presentation, we will have it from the microeconomic side, from the side of individuals, how do they perceive these things happening with the currency change, and what are the potential costs. So the outline is pretty standard. I will first talk about different costs and motivation to do this research at individual level. Then I will introduce you our methodology and the data, research questions and contribution. And finally, we will have a lot of things to discuss in terms of results. I think we will have an interesting conversation. So, if you think of currency like a language, both currency and the language assign some value to and meaning to exchanges. So without language, you probably do not very efficiently communicate with a person. And also without currency, you cannot. The economy is very difficult to function. So in principle, we may think about language and currency as very similar concepts in terms of their perception by individuals. And if we stick to this synonym, then changing one's language and changing one's currency probably will bring some costs to the person, because it's not very straightforward to start to communicate in different language to another person, or to start using the new currency which you are not familiar with. And our hypothesis is that this may affect the well-being of the persons who had to go through this change. And in fact, if you look into European countries who are considering the euro adoption, or actually, more generally, within the European Union, with different referenda, when the topic of euro adoption is brought to the public, often there is a strong popular opposition to this currency, except for some cases when basically the currency is perceived as really big advantage for the country and for the population. So we see the opposition to the currency, and if you do referendum on these kind of things, then also it is not necessary that adoption of euro will pass the referendum. Not all people would agree to change the currency to some new currency. And we argue that this is actually happening because of this psychological cost that people have due to these changes. And this psychological cost is not really something material, not necessarily something material, and not always actually rational. You just feel something different that you may not find even like rational motivation why it is, why you would afraid of changing currency to another one. And in principle, this can be felt deeply by certain sectors of population. For example, those who have a low security in their income or education, they may be afraid of these changes. So potentially, those who are unemployed and low educated should be more in opposition to these changes in the society.
To referenda on euro currency or in the eurozone, you mean there was a referenda in Sweden or in Britain about the currency?
Well, for example, if you read the Polish media, the politicians there sometimes discuss saying that we would not go for adopting the euro without placing a referendum on that. So sometimes it's just a discussion that it has to be done through referendum as well. But in most countries, it is, yes, it is decided on among the politicians only without...
Because even one argument in favor is that there was a referendum on joining the EU in each of the country, and part of the joining treaty was that at some point the country will adopt the euro.
Yes, this so is actually the requirement.
You can make a conclusion that people already agreed to adopt the euro.
In principle, yes, but still the point of entering to the exchange rate mechanism is still to be decided by the country themselves. And this is up to the politicians to decide to bring this question to the public or decide only among the politicians.
And the psychological cost can be related to the inflation that may follow from...
I will talk about that. Yes. And since it is also some cost to the country and to individuals within the country, it is very interesting from a policy perspective as well to understand that there are not only macroeconomic costs and benefits from the currency change, but also can be some costs and benefits on the individual side. So it is also a policy relevant issue, especially when we talk about certain groups of population that may be or may not be affected by the currency changes. If you look deeply into the literature on psychological costs related to money, people often cite these four types of the costs. I will now talk briefly about each of these types. So the first is diffused perception of price changes, what is Martin just mentioned. Then there is also rescaling or anchoring bias, relearning, and subjective costs. So let's go through these four one by one. The first is called these diffused perceptions are related to money illusion. You are when you see the prices in new currency, you may not always feel what is the real value of this new currency, new number. So, and as researchers argue, the individuals tend to think about currency in nominal terms, not in their purchasing currency, but purchasing power, especially if these goods are the low-priced items. Here I borrowed the picture from Ehrman 2006, and this picture shows the development of actual inflation rate and the inflation perceptions. I don't know if you can see it, but these dashed lines here are the actual inflation, and the bold lines here are the inflation perceptions. And this line is 2002, when these old EU members adopted the euro. And you can see that in most of the countries, after the euro adoption, the perception of inflation was much higher than the actual inflation. So In fact, there was no inflation or very low inflation, but people perceived as it is indeed there were price increases during this time. And it happened, if you look into these graphs, it happened in almost all the EU members who adopted the euro in 2002. This is the average for the European area. And these three countries, Denmark, Sweden, and UK, they didn't adopt the euro. Although they are members of the European Union, they refused to adopt the euro. And actually, in their case, both perceptions and the actual inflation coincide. So people indeed think that it was the currency change itself that brought these changes in the inflation perceptions.
May I ask? Yeah. It seems from the picture that the difference between expected or felt inflation and real inflation is closing in the time. How much time it took before it was closed?
Well, it is kind of difficult question because when you talk about these perceptions, people not always thinking about in the long run period.
What I mean is that the two curves are going back together in time. At least it seems in most countries mm-hmm. that they are going back. So if I define canceling the spread or whatever in these terms, how much time it takes before these two lines get together again? Or the spread gets to the similar level as before?
I actually tried it in different paper for 2 years, and during the first year you see really the high differences, but during the second year they are reducing already. So I
so
don't exactly know whether.
Like like
yeah, it's. I think it's between 2 and 3,
uh-huh,
because people still adapt to the changes and they get used to the new currency and so on. So it shouldn't be taking very long.
Yes. In all, at least in Slovakia, when we adopted euro, for the next year we had double prices, so we could see the price in original currency mm-hmm. and new currency. So that should give a signal how much change there is with the adoption, right? Was it the case in all countries that they have the double prices?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But also, when you see prices in two currencies, you are not. At least from the first sight, you are not sure about what should be the fair exchange rate. And still, these prices in the newly written prices in euros, they were perceived as prices higher than the prices written in crowns. At least I was trying to read some Slovak media about that, and I found the cases that they actually discussed that it is, yes. Especially in trains, it was really different in euro and the Slovak krona.
One more question. Was this perception of inflation something like balanced price inflation, meaning that people perceive that their income is increasing in roughly the same rate as prices in shops, or are they feeling that they are getting poorer and poorer because prices are rising higher than?
This can be, yes, one of the explanations that they were feeling that their income were not rising in the same.
Yes, yeah, so this is the case.
Yes, this can be the explanation. So this is called the money illusion, and there are also other costs. Second is rescaling. And it's basically the psychological cost of converting prices from one currency to another in your head. So you have to always, when this currency change is happening, you have to always keep in mind these two prices and convert them. And in the literature they say that it is especially difficult, for example, for the older people who already have different mental possibilities. So psychological convertation also brings some psychological cost.
I'm sorry, I would ask the same question.
how much time it takes before people stop recalculating the new prices to the currency?
I can
months or years or
I can answer you only in case of this paper. We were the Slovakia adopted euro in 2009, and we are taking data of 2010. And in 2010, we still observe these effects. So after
people
2 years, people were still having people were still having these kind of psychological costs. But it is a bit difficult to estimate it empirically because when you exceed the time spent for for analyzing this adaptation, you also you cannot avoid these macroeconomic changes during this period. And the longer period you take, the more intervention from various different factors you will get.
Yeah, and how did you measure it? How did you did ask people, do you still recalculate back to slower currency or?
No, we actually this we use only for the motivation, and then we are receiving just the total some total changes in individual's well-being, and individual well-being, as you will see it, can be used as a proxy to utility or people's psychological everything psychological that individual has. So we, in principle, we would love to distinguish these four, but so far we cannot do so. So we are getting just the aggregate number for the total psychological cost that occurred due to this currency change. But it could be the interesting research idea to try to dig deeper and understand different channels behind that. And the less familiar individuals with the new currency, the more likely they will get this rescaling cost. So for example, if a person is, before the currency adoption, was frequently traveling to the country which already had this currency, so this person already knows this currency more or less. So for such person, these costs would be lower because he is already, he or she is already familiar with the currency. And also another paper says that people compare prices of products in single currency much more accurately than in two currencies. So during this transition period, you have to keep in mind these two numbers, one in old currency, one in the new currency. And then this is the sort of the problem that you have to always keep it in mind, and have this brings also the psychological cost. Then,
may I ask? Well, this currency switching to me looks like when a man changes the country, he definitely switches currency. So, is there any research on people that migrate? How much they feel? How much time it takes them? To them to adopt the new currency when they migrate, because this is roughly the same situation. And my experience is I spent several months in some other country, and after a few weeks I stopped recalculating. I basically knew what butter was the cost of butter and what the cost of bread, and I just cared about relative prices among shops and not how much it is in Czech crowns. The only things that I still recalculated into Czech price was stuff that would be used for a long time, but it was because I just knew that in several months I will go back and I would like to buy it cheap. Yeah. So my impression is that most of these changes should be pretty transitory, and you could use data from migrants, how much time it takes them to adapt to new currency. So is there something in the literature on this?
Actually, not. I haven't seen any of these papers. In general, there are not that many papers that analyze these kind of things at individual level. When research looks into the euro adoption or in general currency change, they look into macroeconomic consequences and benefits of that. But they mostly do not look into individual level. And yeah, with migrants it would be an interesting idea actually. So the other two costs are also related to the long-term memory and the emotional attachment. Especially in case of this emotional attachment, there are several papers for the Deutsche Mark, for German Mark. The Germans were really attached to the their currency before adopting the euro, and there is research showing that it was actually the high emotional attachment to the currency that was like bringing them to the psychological cost. And there is also paper, this one which I cite here, Tishka, and I don't know how to pronounce it. I think they look into Poland, and they also find that in case of Poland, it's really high emotional attachment to their own currency that is also part of the story why Poland is not adopting the euro. And if we look closely into life satisfaction literature, there are also several papers that look how life satisfaction and euro adoption are related. The first paper is more on the macroeconomic level. They look into macroeconomic indicators in the European Union and see that in the European Union, economic integration led also to the integration in the average life satisfaction scores. So people, not only with entering the EU, not only the macroeconomic factors are converging, but also the life satisfaction of people. And there are also several papers that look into the effect of euro adoption. The first is the really first one in the literature by Wunder, who looked into the data on Germany and UK and found that for the Germans it was a negative short-term effect of the euro introduction on financial satisfaction. And I think they only looked into the first year after the euro introduction. Then in our older paper, we looked into all EU member states. And actually, there we find that within 1 year, it doesn't disappear. But by the second year, in some countries, there is already adaptation to the currency and there is no negative effect of currency on the life satisfaction. And there are also two recent papers that look into related topics. First, about the concerns about the euro. So when people are not sure how the currency will be developed in the future, this also reduces their life satisfaction. And the really fresh IZEA working paper also looks into how joining EU, the European Union, affects the life satisfaction of people. And they find especially strong effect for Bulgaria, that Bulgaria entering the European Union, it was a high positive effect for Bulgarian people. So in what we will be looking in this paper, we will be looking closely into individual well-being in Slovakia compared to Czech Republic and investigate how individual well-being was affected by this currency adoption and why we use the individual well-being and life satisfaction data is that because this kind of measures take all possible psychological status and characteristics of person and evaluate their quality of life and their perception of life. So in our case, it will be the aggregate measure of the psychological cost. We will use the difference and differences approach and look into Slovakia as the treatment country and Czech Republic as a control country. Then we will disentangle the effects by different socioeconomic groups. As I said in the beginning, some groups of population may feel these changes more deeply then other groups of population. So we will look how, what were the most affected groups and how they were affected. And finally, this is the contribution to the literature on the analysis of the euro adoption in EU member states, because so far people analyzed this for the old EU members who were introduced in 2002, but there are so far there are no papers on the analysis of euro adoption in the new EU member countries like Slovakia or the Baltic countries. So we will contribute to that literature. And this is the our approach, our econometric model. I will now explain what it all means. So we have the satisfaction on our left-hand side, and we are actually using, for the most of our specifications, we are using satisfaction with the state of economy in the country, not the life satisfaction of individuals. So this is the question on how, whether person is satisfied with the economic situation in his or her own country. In our case, Slovaks were asked about satisfaction with the economy of state of economy in Slovakia, and Czechs were asked about the state of economy, satisfaction with the state of economy in Czech Republic. Then we have these two guys here. Then distinguishes basically periods before and after the euro adoption. As I will tell it later, we are using data from 2008 and from 2010. We do not have data for the actual year of the euro adoption, 2009, but as you will see, we still observe the effects in 2010. It means that there were changes in life, such as in the individual well-being, and these changes in the individual well-being were still felt in 2010, which is kind of already some period after adopting the euro. Then this dummy Slovak will be distinguishing individuals from Czech Republic and from Slovakia, so it is equal to 1 for the if person is from Slovakia. And then we have this interaction term, and we are mostly interested in this coefficient behind this interaction term. This is the difference in differences coefficient. So basically, it will be measuring how the well-being of Slovaks was changed after the euro adoption as compared to the control group and as compared to before the euro adoption. And then we are including the bunch of individual socioeconomic characteristics like age, gender, education, marital status, having children, living in what is the type of settlement, what is the profession, activity of individual, in which sector this individual is employed. Then we include the regional dummies at NUTS 2 level in Czech Republic and Slovakia. And this one last is the stochastic error term. The satisfaction variable is measured by the survey question. I will explain it a bit later. So it takes the scale from 0 to 10, increasing scale. So 0 is the lowest satisfaction and 10 is the highest satisfaction. In principle, the most appropriate methodology for doing this would be the ordered Logit-Probit model. But since we have kind of nice scale from 0 to 10, like 11 points, we assume it as a continuous variable. It also helps to correctly calculate our main effect of interest, because there are papers arguing that it is not very straightforward to calculate the marginal effects for the interaction terms. So we stick to the simple methodology using the linear model, and we are estimating basically this equation with OLS and then divided by several groups, socioeconomic groups, and see what are the costs for different groups of society. So regarding the hypothesis, we first start with the general effect whether this currency change affected individuals in Slovakia. So we are interested in this alpha DD coefficient from the previous slide. And then once we tested this hypothesis, we also disentangled this effect for different socioeconomic groups of population. So we re-estimate these regressions for different socioeconomic groups and test the quality of coefficients, the quality of the effects, this alpha DD for different groups of individuals, like what is the, whether low-educated and high-educated have the same effect, whether men and women have the same effect, and so on. And groups we distinguish are by age, gender, levels of education, income, marital status, having or not having children, and living in urban or rural rural settlement. Main data source that we are using is the European Social Survey from 2008 and 2010. As I will talk later, we are also using the earlier waves of this survey for some checks on our methodology. I will stop by on that later. So basically, these are nationally representative cross-sectional surveys of individuals that include a number of questions on individuals' life and socioeconomic characteristics. So we have the information on the life satisfaction, satisfaction with economic situation, and usual socioeconomic stuff like age, education, gender, and some other questions. So the total number in both years in both countries, total number of individuals that we analyze is 7,000. And we also applied the design and population weights. This helps to make make the countries comparable. So these samples are a bit different in Czech Republic and in Slovakia. So by applying the population size weights, we are approaching this comparability of two samples. And also, you can imagine that from different regions of Slovakia and different regions of Czech Republic, people were chosen differently. There is, for example, higher likelihood to be chosen for a survey if you live in the capital city than if you live in some village. To correct for this kind of possible selections, we also applied the design weights. So our sample is the comparable and it doesn't suffer from the selection biases. Now the life satisfaction questions. So the main question that we are using is this stated here. On the whole, how satisfied are you with the present state of the economy in your country? From extremely dissatisfied to extremely satisfied. And generally, these life satisfaction questions are used to evaluate how individuals judge their own quality of life. It can be more general, that overall quality of life, or like in our case, with some satisfaction with some particular domain. And all these kind of questions, they are suggested to be used as the measure of individuals' experienced utility. So basically, they aggregate individuals' perception about recent changes in their life. And yeah, usual question is like life satisfaction question. Overall, how satisfied are you? And we are using this domain question, satisfaction with the present state of the economy. At the one of my last slides, I will also talk a little bit about the life satisfaction question and what we do with that. The important thing to apply this kind of methodology is to choose the proper control variable, because treatment and control variables should be sufficiently similar to each other in order for you to evaluate these effects. So the control country should be the country which similar enough to the treatment country, but it is not affected by the our policy, which is the euro introduction. So it has to have some historical, social, economic similarities, but not adopted the euro. So in our case, we are using Slovakia as a treatment and Czech Republic as a control. To proceed with the methodology, we first test differences in socioeconomic characteristics between the individuals in Czech Republic and Slovakia to ensure that they are similar enough, our samples are similar enough. And then we are also using the counterfactual euro adoption. So we say, what would happen to our results if the euro introduction was actually happening in 2008, whether we see any changes in 2008 as compared to earlier years. And this is called the common trend assumption, meaning that if, in case of this counterfactual euro adoption, you do not observe any effect, then these dependent variables move really similarly. It means that treatment and control groups are really chosen nicely. So these are the first tests. So here we take basically all characteristics that we use in our individual regression, compute means for them in Czech Republic and for Slovakia, calculate the difference in these means, and test whether this difference is statistically significant or not. This is for the year 2008, which is the year prior to euro adoption, before the euro adoption in Slovakia. And as you can see, yes, these countries differ in their satisfaction with economic situation, but this is not the problem for us. We have to ensure that in most explanatory characteristics, we have the similarity. So we see that there are differences in sample in terms of gender. There are, in Czech Republic, there are more men than in Slovakia here. Then in terms of age, the difference is not statistically significant, mean age. In terms of education as well, in terms of self-employment, marital status, having high income, household size, and so on. So the characteristics in which we have some differences are employment status and gender, basically. Yeah, being out of labor force as well. So still, you can claim that in most characteristics that are used in the estimation, two samples are sufficiently similar. And now what concerns this counterfactual euro adoption? This is basically our regression, which we use. So the dependent variable is satisfaction with economic situation. And here we take year 2006 and year 2008 as a year of counterfactual euro adoption. And the main coefficient of our interest is this interaction term, Slovak multiplied by year. And you see that this coefficient is not statistically significant. There are no differences between Czech Republic and Slovakia before the euro adoption. So they have the same trend in the satisfaction with economic situation, controlling for all the socioeconomic characteristics. And this is the main assumption that has to hold when we are doing this kind of difference-in-difference approach.
We are comparing 2 years before the crisis, 2006-2008. Is it 2008 there was a crisis, and then I think like Slovakia and Czech Republic, the impact of the crisis was different. Is it a problem in this test, because we are comparing 2 years when we had common trajectory, growth trajectory by then. After 2008, I think the crisis in the Czech Republic was harder than Slovakia, but I'm not sure.
I will talk about macroeconomic factors a bit later, but generally we We see that if the crisis was affecting the individual well-being, in terms of individual well-being, these changes due to crisis were similar in both countries. Maybe in macroeconomic characteristics they were affected differently, but still this maybe to different extent. But still, for the individual well-being, it was more or less the same effect of crisis. So for us, it's not a problem. If it would be a problem if we would be using the macroeconomic model and so on.
So if you ask an individual about the evaluation of economic situation, probably some softer factors like how, if the individual reads the newspaper daily, or if he watches the news, or some of these soft factors may matter as well on how the individual evaluates objectively the situation. Now the question would be whether you have the same type of individuals in both samples in terms of these characteristics that are aware, so whether the awareness is the same of the economic situation.
Well, we were actually not looking into this media variable, but we were looking later onto the effects of economic freedom and macroeconomic indicators. But I see your point that, especially in case of this satisfaction with economic situation, maybe that they just read it and watch TV all the time and see that TV says it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, then it formulates their perceptions, maybe. In principle, yes, we can try to see what is happening that. But I will also show you the result with the life satisfaction, and you will see that the story there is a bit different than with the story with the economic satisfaction. So this was for this counterfactual euro adoption, and the main thing was to find no statistically significant effect here before the actual euro adoption. And now we come to the main results. So this is already 2008 and 2010, where 2010 is used as a treatment year. And you see that, in general, during this year, both individuals in Czech Republic and in Slovakia were less satisfied with the state of the economy. Slovaks were in general happier than the Czechs, but due to the this treatment happening, this coefficient is negative and statistically significant. It means that after the euro adoption, Slovaks were feeling less satisfied as compared to Czechs and as compared to the situation before this currency change. And it implies that we have some negative psychological costs. And next slide, I will show you how this effect is actually decomposed by different groups of population. Who were the groups who were mostly affected by this change? And if we look into other characteristics, they are pretty standard for the satisfaction literature. So we have no statistically significant effect between the difference between men and women, U-shaped difference in life in satisfaction by age, more educated are more satisfied, married are more satisfied, highly people with higher income are more satisfied, and household size, increasing household size decreases dissatisfaction. So this is the general result, and now let's look how it actually decomposes.
But the dummy, the interaction dummy, it includes both effects, the effect of crisis and adoption of the currency.
In principle, yes.
So you cannot really disentangle these two, right?
Yes and no. From this specification, yes, we cannot disentangle it correctly. But at the later stage for the robustness checks, instead of regional fixed effects, we try different macroeconomic variables. So these macroeconomic variables are assumed to catch the effect of the crisis changes. So what is left for the change in life satisfaction will be the impact of the euro. And this is the most we can do because we do not have any really specific question of like how you were hit by the currency change and something like that. So we do not, this is the most we can do, I would say. And then if we look into different groups. Yep, sorry. Yeah, we looked into the election dates and, well, we were not including anything like that into the regression, but as a matter of fact, we studied this political economy stuff, whether it is only also political stuff it can be affecting. There were not like significant changes during this time, at least what we were finding. Maybe you have a different story about that.
Yeah, I'm expecting if there is a general election in any of the countries, you have like a lot of news about maybe also bad news or bad painting of the economic situation in one of these countries. But if there are no,
in 2010 there was election in Slovakia.
In Slovakia.
Yeah. So it depends like when the survey happens. This election where it was weak. I'm not sure. There was a change of government. So exactly.
Yeah,
that.
But I'm not sure how the campaign is run in Slovakia. But if you look in the U.S. they are basically just painting everything black, right? So the
but the Czech Republic was their election in 2009?
I don't remember, I'm not sure.
So a long time ago.
A long time ago.
I don't think so, it was like 2012, right?
13. But still, that can make potentially like.
But I think still it is more related to this media effect that you are mentioning than to election. But maybe. Generally, we try to at least to, in the paper to discuss and isolate different facts. If even if you cannot like catch them empirically, we try to discuss them in the paper. And yeah, now let's look into these different groups. So we have first groups distinguished by age. You have the in this first column you have the basically the effect for this particular group, and this, then these tests indicate basically these pairwise comparisons between different groups. And you can see that, for example, young and middle-aged people were affected similarly, so there are no differences between them. Middle-aged and old, they are different. So the for the you see it all. You can see it also from here. So this coefficient for older people is much more negative, and it is statistically significant difference. And for between old and young, it is again statistically significant difference. So we can say that those are the old people who are mostly affected out of these groups. We see no differences between males and females, so they were affected similarly. Also, no differences between rural and rural population. There are differences between employed and unemployed. So the unemployed, again, were affected more severe than the employed. And no difference between married and unmarried people. Higher and lower educated were affected differently. Again, lower educated were affected much more severely. And also interestingly, people with children were affected more negatively than people without children. So they were probably having different expectations about that and different like story how their the currency may affect them.
Still, how you did it? Because it seems to me that some of these it seems that you made a lot of regressions and changed that one factor. But these factors may have been correlated with each other, like education or income, be correlated with the number of kids in the family.
Yeah. We were doing it just separately. We Run the regression only for young, receive the coefficient. Run the regression only for middle age, only for old, receive the coefficient. So these were taken from all for like separate regressions. We were not controlling for like for some profile of the person.
Can you then interpret it that it's caused, say, by the number of kids, when it may be caused by education, and educated people earn more money and have less children, perhaps?
Well, yeah. In principle, we can create some profile of a person and say how this person, like highly educated with kids and high income, how it is affected from other things. But in our case, in the interpretation would be that, let's say, for the persons with the same average level of education, those who have kids were affected more severely than those.
Different regressions, you cannot do this unless the factors are orthogonal. Won't be orthogonal.
Yes. We can just say something on average. We cannot isolate this factor. You're right.
Okay, I'm just asking. I'm sorry for interruption.
But the amazing is that the only group of young people that are not significant, all others are significantly different.
Well, rural, urban, males, females also.
Yeah, but if you compare Czech urban to to Slovak urban, you see that the difference is significant, right?
Mm.
So it's only the young Slovak that are the same or evaluate the economic situation same as Czech young.
Basically, this is sketched by this
psychological cost, let's say, right?
Yes. And this is for purely illustrative purposes. We basically calculate some kind of index where in nominator we have this the alpha DD coefficient for a particular group, and in denominator we have overall coefficient from the like overall average regression, the very first result which I was showing. And basically this one means that this particular group was affected approximately on average the same as the in overall regression. And then the most interesting groups are those who have effects higher than this one. And you see that really, the most severely affected group are the old people, and then the second severest group are unemployed people, and then you have these lower educated children and slightly higher effect here than one for males. So males were slightly more severely affected by these changes than females. And this brings to the story that those groups are the less protected against these kind of changes, and those groups are the groups that should be maybe informed more during these kind of policy changes. I know that in principle, before the euro adoption, there were some leaflets distributed about the information. That what would be happening, and they were also distributed through several NGOs to reach specific groups of population, and we basically find the support that this is the right policy to do, to inform in particular old unemployed and lower educated people about these kind of changes. And
I can see as if we're married and unmarried, there is no effect, because as if I don't get it very well. It's as if there was no impact.
Well, there is impact for them, like from this picture, but they are also negatively affected, but on average, they are affected in the same way as the average population. There is no much difference between these two. So they do not reach this one, and we are mostly interested in those who were like more negatively affected less affected. But in principle, you can also bring the story back and say those people who are least affected are people with higher education and who are employed. So these are two groups, in young people. Those are three groups who were less affected out of the whole population. Those three groups were less affected. But of course, it can be like mixed. It can be a highly educated, employed person who was suffering less out of all the population. All effects here are negative effects, but if they are for them, it is less negative than for the compared to the average actually to weather average population. And finally, we also applied different methodology to see whether non-parametric analysis will also give us the similar picture. And we applied the nearest neighbor matching. So basically, we match individuals from Czech Republic and Slovakia on several characteristics, which are male, age, employment, high income, and urban status, and see whether the effect, average treatment effect on treated is also negative or not. The main thing here is to have the balancing tests which are nicely performing, so we have to have balanced samples. It means that on all characteristics on which we are matching, there should be no statistical differences between these characteristics between Czech Republic and Slovakia. So we first reach this stage, and then we estimate the average treatment effect on treated, and we see that it is also the negative effect here. In terms of magnitude, you cannot compare it to the previous number, but you can say that it is also the negative result here. And we did it with the nearest neighbor matching, but we also tried different matching methodologies like kernel density matching, five nearest neighbors, and so on. They were all showing the similar picture. And finally, we also did a number of robustness checks on our results. We tried to isolate this effect of crisis. So instead of regional dummies in our regression, we added a bunch of macroeconomic indicators and to see whether the effect, this negative effect of the treatment still persists. So instead of regional dummies, we used economic freedom index, regional GDP per capita, and the unemployment. And relatively to our previous result, we see that this difference estimator was slightly higher than our previous methodology, but it was also negative and statistically significant. So here, result was minus one something, and here it is minus 0.8, but still statistically significant. And we also tested whether this number is different from our number received in our benchmark specification. And statistically, there was no difference between this 1 point something and 0.8. We also tried to build a story, we can try another control variable, another control country. And we experimented it with Poland. So if you, instead of Czech Republic, you use Poland as a control, so the country which also did not adopt the euro, we still see that this, our main effect of interest, remains significant, but it is smaller than the effect when we compared Czech Republic and Slovakia.
Know this, it looks like
the period of adoption is actually a world economic crisis time, which I'm really thinking that apparently during that period there's already some kind of psychological effect in the society. So looking at the adoption in that kind of time, I'm looking at its appropriateness, considering the fact that currently, if you adapt the currency and change at that period of time, would that affect the negative psychologically because of the world economic crisis?
Well, yes, there were potential changes in the individual well-being due to crisis, and as I was answering previously, in both treatment and control, these changes we checked that were kind of similar. Okay, straightforwardly and like 100% correctly, we cannot disentangle the effect of euro from the effect of macroeconomic crisis.
Yeah, but my problem is I'm looking at the effect, because I'm thinking that during that period of time, there's a lot of psychological effect already, especially with the recession,
mm-hmm.
and then the fact that they consider the recession, and then the fact that the European Union during that period was hard hit. So I'm really thinking that, was it even an appropriate period, considering the situation that if you are looking at a psychological effect, will it be an appropriate period for a kind of analysis?
Well, of course
that's really my concern. And if it is, how would you really control for such a situation? And I don't know if you really did that.
Yeah, the most I can do is that I include these macroeconomic effects that were affected by the crisis and see how they are affected our satisfaction with economy. So these macroeconomic effects were in principle catching the effect, psychological effects of crisis. And then what is left in our treatment variable will presumably be the effect of the euro. But I cannot say, of course, that it is 100% effect of the euro, because this is not a specific question on the euro adoption. But it is the most we can do so far. But in principle, yes, it is kind of complicated question with this particular timing of euro adoption by this country. Okay, and the last point that we did, we also used different well-being indicators. So instead of satisfaction with the economy, we first tried the subjective health. So whether the subjective health of individuals was affected by this treatment policy or not. And we find actually that there is no effect of euro adoption on the subjective health of individuals. So it is not the part of the story that goals, they were, it was really something related to psychological satisfaction with the economy, not with the satisfaction about personal health situation. And it also helps to try to isolate the effect of the euro itself, not the other things. And the last point, we experimented it with the life satisfaction. And here you can see the very interesting result that actually the when you run this regression with the life satisfaction, you observe the positive effect. It means that Slovaks were, in general, became more happy with the euro. They were less satisfied with the economic situation, but in general, in their overall evaluation of the quality of life, they became more happy. So it is also something to be researched a bit deeply because it seems that the effects about satisfaction with economic situation and satisfaction with the life satisfaction disentangle really different things. So if the satisfaction with the economy is more about the economic side of the effects and it's more likely to be about the euro, then satisfaction with the life may be meaning some different stuff. Maybe they were really glad of introducing euro faster than the Czech Republic. So something, some emotional thing that led them to feel differently.
Please, I want to know if sensitization, you control for sensitization properly, how educated in terms of the euro adoption in both countries. I don't know whether it was highly marketed for everyone in the society to really get the understanding of it, because apparently people are well informed about the euro itself. It might really, the effect of their psychological effect might be different. So
yes,
I want to know if you really did control for sensitization for both.
We didn't control for that, but we discussed it in the paper, because what you're actually telling that it's the policy implication of our study, saying that if you properly inform people, then especially specific groups of people, then the psychological cost, there is a potential to reduce them during this period. So,
but the empirical situation itself could be a concern here. Because let's look at, for example, white people who are not, maybe if both countries, let's say, for example, in Czech, people, lots of people are more informed about the euro situation than probably in Slovakia, then it might have a serious problem there. Because when people, especially when the aged, are not much informed about the policy and how is it, the shock is quite heavy, probably compared to when they are really aware of the situation and what it is. So I'm not really talking about its policy implication. I'm really talking about the situation, empirical situation, considering the fact that whether people are really well informed about policy, whether it is the same in both countries before the test was done.
Well, I can tell about the situation in Slovakia. They were distributing a lot of leaflets and a lot of information about the forthcoming currency change. Here, people, of course, they know that by the legal situation with the European Union, you are expected to enter the Eurozone at some point in future, but there is no much like information provided what would be the consequences and so on, I think so.
Some two questions. One, you talked about the issue of referenda. May I know how best was this be conducted? Was it supposed to be done at once, say, considering the countries that were going to enter the Eurozone? Was the issue of referenda done simultaneously at that stage, or it would depend upon the country where it was being done from? And then two, would it mean that, can we attribute the fact that countries like UK, Poland, and another country, which other country did you say that did not?
Sweden, Denmark, and UK, they officially refused to enter the...
Refused to enter the euro aspect. Could you assume that it's because of such psychological costs that they were looking at a later stage that probably could have prompted them not to, to join the euro currency?
Well, in principle, yes, we can say that this is the part of the story, that they would expect higher psychological costs than...
Well, so there is no need of us joining the euro currency.
Yes, this is the part of the story, but of course we have to consider the macroeconomic story as well and the political situation, because they... themselves already have quite strong currencies, and they do not have macroeconomic incentives to switch to the euro.
Okay.
And this is probably also felt by the population. So I think in their case it is less less pronounced effect.
Population high, though, in their case.
What do you mean?
By population?
I mean, whenever you discuss this kind of situation, currency change, you either do like a public discussion in the media that there will be some changes, or at least or the referendum regarding the issue. So in case of UK, Denmark, Sweden, they have quite strong currencies, and probably also quite strong the emotional attachment to their currencies. So this is also the case for them. But in my view, the story is different for those countries that are expected to enter the Eurozone. Those who are for
that
like
expectations for them, right?
And for us, it also our study provides some more information on that for the potential members of the Eurozone. What could be the effects not only on the on the macroeconomic side, but on the individual side? What can be the issues? And here, basically, I was coming to the final slide of my presentation. So the overall response to the euro adoption from our study is negative. And if you look into different groups, almost all population groups were affected negatively, but negatively to a different extent. So the most vulnerable are those who are unemployed, poorly educated, and with old and with children. Older people are particularly concerned group. They report decreases in satisfaction with economic situation, twice larger than those who are than the rest of the population. And this basically, since we look into also included macroeconomic variables there, and we still found that effect, it means that even if we isolate microeconomic factors that affecting the satisfaction, we still find this negative effect in terms of the satisfaction with economic situation. So even if we isolate the macroeconomic indicators, we still have some psychological costs at individual level. And generally, the implication would be that we have to inform properly the most specific groups of population that were likely to be affected more severely. So before actually adopting this kind of policy change, we have to try to reach these specific groups of population and inform them properly. So that was it for my presentation, and if you have any additional feedback, I will be very happy to answer.
Thank you.